I'm JJ Jackson with Ryan Lavoie and Christian Page in our studios. We'll go to our phone lines, and we are very excited to be joined by ESPN's Adam Amin. Adam, we appreciate the time. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you doing today?
Very well. Thank you so much for joining us here today. We'll get to a little bit of the NBA Finals and remembering Rod Bramblin in just a little bit, but let's start with the Women's College World Series. Obviously, Auburn, the program itself, quite familiar with that in the past couple of years, but I'm curious from your perspective, Adam, what makes the event, the full week, so special?
I think the expansion of it now, whether it's television coverage, whether it is ratings, whether it's the number of people that continuously keep coming back and the new people that keep coming in and realizing how great of an event it really is. And you guys know what it's like. Obviously, Auburn going there a couple years in a row, 15 and 16. And you guys remember the emotion of the championship series. It was intense. It was close. That might have been arguably the best championship series of all time, certainly, but I think the best three-game series of all time. Yeah. And I just feel like people have figured it out. They figured it out that it's a great TV sport. It's a great sport to watch in person. Like, little things that baseball hasn't embraced, like they celebrate after every home run. They come out of the dugout. They greet the hitter of the home run. Within 5 seconds, they're all out there. And just to see just something. It's just something that hooks people in. People want to get excited about a sport, and this sport gives you many reasons to get excited. So I feel like a combination of a lot of these things is really starting to give this sport some momentum, some much-deserved momentum. But this has been a great event for a long time. Certainly, I've been lucky enough since I've been calling it to see it grow in just about a five-year period. It's been amazing.
Yeah, Adam, that exactly is kind of what I was about to ask, is why has this sport taken off so much? Because it feels like really the last 10 years or so, it's become as popular, if not more popular, than just college baseball. And I don't know, is it just because it's a quicker game, or kind of what goes more into that?
Yeah, I think the pacing of this game is conducive to people being invested in it. You know, it's explosive moments. You know, there aren't really that many, you know, when we played big games, when we played the World Series, there aren't that many run rules. We had one with Alabama and Florida, but that was the only one. Every other game just about, and I guess technically UCLA and Oklahoma in game one as well in the championship series. But other than those two games, out of the, you know, 12 or 13, I can't remember what the exact number was, ended up maybe being 14 or 15. Like, there were two games that weren't close at any point. Like, the other games were all right there, right down to the wire, late inning games. You had three walk-offs at this World Series, including the championship clincher. So I just feel like the pacing of the sport is really conducive to getting people invested. And I just feel like this is probably a great time of year as well. Like, the NBA Finals are going on, but this is a great secondary option, I feel like. I feel like this is the sport that everybody kind of looks to now and goes, hey, I'll sit down for 2 hours and watch this thing. And I just feel like the fact that the timing's great, the pacing is great, the offense is up, so certainly you're giving people stuff to be excited about. So I think, like I said before, a combination of a lot of different things outside and inside the lines that really have contributed to the popularity of it.
Adam, you bring up the UCLA-Oklahoma Championship Series. That first game, like you said, 16-3 in UCLA's favor, didn't bring that necessarily that overall competitive excitement that we're used to seeing in a championship series. But game two, even though UCLA was able to go just and win the championship in two games, what were some of your takeaways for maybe that game alone and just the championship series as a whole?
Yeah, just the competitiveness, the competitiveness, the back and forth. I mean, that really was a great game. Superstars stepped up. You know, there are great stories on both sides. I think the Shane Knighton story is one that you can't escape, especially if you've been watching the last 4 years. The contributions that she's made to two of those championships, the clutch hits she's had, extending her own career by another half inning with a home run, and then seeing Rachel Garcia do what she was kind of billed as, you know, to be the great two-way player that she was, the amazing performance on Sunday, and then translated into the championship series, get the key outs when necessary, contribute offensively. I was impressed. I was impressed with the balance of UCLA, beg your pardon, against a great team like Oklahoma, who a lot of people thought was the heavy favorite, rightfully so. But I take away what Rachel Garcia did from this week as maybe the biggest takeaway. I just to see a two-way performance like that to have the National Player of the Year win the championship. It's only happened four times. So I think that's probably the biggest takeaway I had this week.
ESPN's Adam Amin, our guest right now on the Thursday edition of Sports Call. We just mentioned briefly there the NBA Finals overlapping currently with the Women's College World Series. And Adam, you were on the call for numerous NBA games throughout the year. I'm curious your thoughts on the series thus far. What do you think is going to happen over these next four games in this best of seven?
Yeah, obviously we're concerned with the health of Kevin Durant right now. We were in the middle of the second round when he got hurt, and I called the clinching game, game six with Golden State against Houston, when they were able to win without him and sweep Portland without Kevin Durant. You know, we kind of had this expectation that he was eventually going to be back in the lineup, and I just feel like with the two ways that Golden State plays, when they play a really solid defensive team that rotates as well as Toronto does, and Toronto is one of the best defensive teams in the NBA the last 2 years, I feel like you're going to run into some problems, and that's where they're missing Kevin Durant. It's not the fact that the offense can't work against Toronto. It's the fact that their defense is tailor-made to try to limit what Golden State does. And I think for the most part, other than a couple of these third quarters, they've done that. They've really limited what Golden State really thrives on offensively, and that's ball movement, player movement. And I feel like their rotations have been good enough to kind of prevent them from getting to spots where they want to get to. So Kevin Durant not being here is actually a bigger deal because he's the ultimate isolation mismatch. And without that, Toronto's defense is able to kind of solidify what it's been doing in a half-court set most of the season. And then when they've been able to turn him over, long runouts, getting some points in transition, obviously that was a major storyline of the first couple of games.
Adam, when you're looking at the series from Toronto's point of view, and obviously losing home court in game two seems so disappointing and disheartening, knowing how Golden State typically is at home. But last night, their role players, and maybe it's not fair to call Kyle Lowry a role player. He's been one of their two best players for a long time. Right. But Kyle Lowry and Danny Green really stepped up their game, hit clutch shots, it seemed like, every time the Warriors would get back into it. I feel, Adam, like with Klay and Kevin out, I feel like there's a confidence about Toronto that they can get this thing done. Is that kind of what you've seen?
I think anybody is going to have confidence against Golden State when they don't have to match up with two out of their big three. Obviously, Golden State's still so talented they can win games. I mean, you know, with just Curry leading the way, they've done that before. But I think Klay Thompson's the biggest asset that they're without right now. Obviously, he's expected to play in Game Four, but he's such an asset at the defensive end, and I think a lot of people who don't maybe watch year-round don't really realize how key Klay Thompson is at both ends of the floor now. He's not just a catch-and-shoot three-point guy, which is what he was billed as, and maybe the best catch-and-shoot three-point guy in the NBA for a while. Like, they were so good with ball and player movement that all Klay had to do was run through a couple screens, get to a spot, catch-and-shoot. What he's done is added a dribble game, because people were so hell-bent on coming out and making sure they prevent his three-point shot that now he's driving past guys getting to the rim. And then finally, he got an all-defensive team selection for the first time, and frankly, I thought he was undervalued as a perimeter defender. His perimeter defense is probably the second most important thing that he does for this team, and he might be their best perimeter defender outside of Andre Iguodala. So I feel like without Klay, it's a bigger loss. So I think they'll be happy to have him back. They'll certainly be in a position to tie up the series. But I think when you don't have two of those big three and you've gotten so used to running this offense in a certain capacity, that's why Curry had to do so much in Game 3, I think that causes some problems. So I feel like Klay is a bigger loss. Obviously, we'll see how Durant, you know, gets by after Game 4. But they need Klay to have a good game, and they need him to defend well in Game 4 to even up the series.
Game 4 tomorrow night from Oakland as the Warriors look to even up the series in this best of seven games in the NBA Finals. ESPN's Adam Amin, our guest right now. Here in Auburn, still, Adam, we're still in shock, honestly, by the passing of Rod and Paula Bramblett with what they meant to the community. On Twitter, you shared some pretty honest and candid thoughts on Rod Bramblett and the relationship that you two guys had. For folks who aren't aware, take us back to that 2013 Iron Bowl and the things that have transpired since.
Yeah, I don't need to set the scene too much in terms of the game because obviously you guys are so familiar with it and understandably so. But I'll give you just a sense from my perch. We were on the photo deck. We were doing the national broadcast on radio, and we were on the photo deck right in front of Auburn's radio broadcast booth, and that was one of the first times I had ever met Rod, actually. He and I crossed paths a couple times. We'd crossed paths a couple times.
Sure.
That was one of the first times we actually got a chance to, like, sit down,
yeah,
you know, before a game and chat, and then afterwards, you know, and we got a chance to take that photo. Rod, to me, was kind of the everyman broadcaster, and that's not an insult to his technical capabilities. This is strictly as a feel. You know, there are a lot of technically great broadcasters out there, and Rod is one of them. He gives you what you need. He gives you the time and score. He gives you the geography, the who, the what, and the why, and the how. But I think more importantly, he gave you a natural feel about why you should be invested in this game. Now, I get it's easy for Auburn fans because that's your guy. You're going to be invested in your radio voice. But for people outside of the SEC, people like me who didn't have an understanding of SEC football until this decade, because I wasn't a college football guy growing up, so I really took a lot of information in. And Rod was one of those people that I wanted to take information from. He had such a sensibility, a common sensibility about him as a person, as a human being, that allowed you to connect with him through the radio broadcast. And I think that shined. I think that really shined through, like, when you just met him. He had a great positive vibe about him. He'd always joke with me after I've called a couple of Auburn basketball games and they had lost a couple of those games. Said, well, I guess you're not really welcome back here in Auburn Arena anymore. And we were able to have, you know, it's a simple joke, but it's just something that makes you giggle because he comes at you with such earnestness and with, it's weird to say, you know, say this in the past tense. He came at you with such an earnestness and a sensibility that you just appreciated the type of person he was. And I think he made it okay for me as a broadcaster. I'm sure a lot of other young broadcasters who come up listening to Rod, he made it okay to be a fan. And not an uninformed fan, and not an inaccurate fan, and not a homer, but somebody who wanted his team to win, wanted his team to do well, gave respect to the other team, but when something big happened, you felt it. You felt that this was an important moment, and you should be invested in it because he was, and because he was a great human being, and then he got invested in something that made it okay for you to do the same thing. So that's the biggest takeaway I'll have about Rod, and a lot of that has very little to do with him as a broadcaster. It certainly translates, but it had very little to do with him as a broadcaster, a lot more to do with him as a person.
He's going to be sorely missed, that's for sure. Saturdays inside Jordan Hare Stadium are not quite going to be the same going forward with Auburn football. Before we let you go, Adam, we're also just curious, the number of times that you've come to Auburn, whether it be football or those basketball games that you just alluded to, what jumps out to you about Auburn, Alabama, compared to the other SEC campuses that you visited?
No, just a great sense of home. The weather is great during the spring and during the early fall. It's hard to find a more picturesque place in the SEC, and certainly with some of my favorite spots. Acre might be my favorite burger in the entire country. It's probably got some of the best food in the entire SEC. And then I just remember being there for the spring game a couple of years ago, and being there the night before with a dinner, and just seeing the kind of interactions with everybody around the program, around the football team, and I think this really does translate to other sports around campus, but I feel like just with the football team, the way that people got so excited, the buzz that was created every single week on, you know, whether it was Friday night or on Saturday morning leading into a big game on Saturday afternoon or Saturday night, just the kind of sense of family that Auburn really gives you, and I really do appreciate everything that Auburn's given to us, and I say this on behalf of ESPN,
sure,
and I'm sure CBS and anybody else who's gotten the chance to go down there, they've always treated us really, really well, and we certainly appreciate it.
You can follow him on Twitter at Adam Amin. Adam, where can our listeners expect to see you next in your broadcast duties?
You know, it'll be a little bit. We just got done here in Oklahoma City, and I just got back home, so I think it'll be a few weeks before I resurface. So I'll try to take some time and hide on my couch for a little while I can. But looking forward to getting back at it, especially come college football season.
And we hope that you're a part of our future in college football season. Adam, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.